And I would like to introduce Dr. Stephen Stack as certainly a longtime member of ASEP, but expanding his scope of influence way beyond emergency medicine into the House of Medicine as the president of the AMA Board of Trustees. Steve.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for these 30 minutes.
We're going to do this about six or seven times while you're standing there.
No, I'm kidding. Thank you. It's a great privilege to be here. I'm not going to go into a lot of details about policy. This is listed as an AMA update. I will say that later in the week, I have the opportunity to host a luncheon on Tuesday, and it's in the Convention Center, room 209 from 12 to 1:30. I hope you'll come, and we'll talk about details. I also have the opportunity to do a meet and greet tomorrow or Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the AMA booth. If you'll stop by, I'll be happy to talk with anyone and pull me aside at any point. What I want to talk about here for at least a few minutes is a little bit about the history of our profession, of our specialty, and then sort of some central themes that I'd like to try to convey and leave with you. Pause just for a minute and think back. We've all seen the videos, the great work EMRA's done with some of their historical documentary videos and the historical book the AMA or the ASEP's done. But in the late 60s, when this specialty didn't exist, and a handful of visionaries got together in a hotel ballroom and decided that having the doctor with the least qualifications who drew the short straw taking care of the sickest people in the nation was just not a good way to provide emergency services for patients. And that group of visionaries got together and started a long journey to create this specialty so that this group of leaders and others today get to lead in the House of Medicine and get to push forward the edges of science and care and quality and concern for our patients. That journey began in no small measure at the AMA, because in that time and era, that's where you went to begin the process for specialty recognition. And they had to get laughed at and embarrassed and not taken seriously about why the heck would you want to do this, and this is a joke, and that's not a discrete body of knowledge. And they persevered through all that. And to go through that, when I started out, I had the privilege to meet Dr. Wittgenstein, who still went and attended the AMA meetings. To go through all of that, and now to get 45 or so years later, and to have one of us who's EM residency trained and ABEM board certified, who still practices, to be able to stand and say that they're the president of the American Medical Association is not as much a comment on whatever abilities I brought to it, but the successes of the specialty. And I want you to hear, for all of you who have broken so many glass ceilings yourself for the specialty, thank you. And for me, who gets to serve and break this particular glass ceiling for our specialty, it's one hell of an honor. And so thank you very much for all your support that has made this possible for the great work we do in emergency medicine. Now what I want to do in just a few minutes is share a few thoughts. So we've all heard the Margaret Mead quote that's roughly that never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has, or something close to that. And I want you to hear, I get it. It's really hard. So I worked a shift this past Thursday. I went in at 7 in the morning. I spent the first 30 minutes trying to get into the stupid computer. It sounds familiar, right? So after I'd fallen two patients behind that I shouldn't have fallen behind, I then had a patient come in who was 32 and had asthma, but she'd had a pulmonary embolism a month earlier. And after they discharged her, they got her on Xarelto and tried to set her up with the primary care doctor. Now she comes in with an asthma flare. And of course, she'd never followed up with the primary care doctor. And notwithstanding, you know how you have to ask the question five ways until you finally get the right answer? Well, she was taking her medicine until somehow I changed the combination of words when I asked again, and she actually had run out. So now my asthma flare was also an untreated pulmonary embolism patient, and it all gets really complicated. So I figured she could go home, and I wrote a Xarelto prescription and called case management, and they sent in a prior auth. I don't do that. I don't know about you. And then at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, after this is long done, Medicaid calls and says, some pharmacy tech, we've declined the prior auth, so they have to try and fail Coumadin first. To which I said, they don't have a primary care doctor. Who's going to monitor that? How's that going to get done? Xarelto I will write because I don't have to monitor it, but I will not write Coumadin. So you can either pay for emergency department visits or hospital visits. I said, no, wait a minute, you don't pay for those either. Or you can pay for Xarelto. You do whatever you want. I'm trying to do what's right for the patient. So of course, I wasn't very pleasant. I didn't swear, I wasn't personally mean. I said, I'm sure she cared, but I knew her company didn't. So I went over all of this with her. And sometime early in the day, Jay Kaplan had emailed me, and he was flying on his way over here. And I said, it's been a rough day in the emergency department. So at ICD-10, when our EHR upgraded, they took out all the quick pick diagnoses. So I have to manually search every diagnosis and try to figure out how to navigate. They took all the crosswalks out so that it doesn't go to the patient education, so it doesn't give suggestions. I now have to manually search for every education sheet. So all this is going on at the same time of a 49-year-old who I have to go and give a horrific diagnosis of the back pain that I just thought was musculoskeletal turns out to be a massive lung cancer wrapped around his aorta and is compressing his pulmonary artery, and have to essentially go and give that horrific diagnosis to this guy. And at 6 o'clock at night, this man's been there for 7.5 hours. And I'm livid because I just argued with Medicaid. I'm fighting with the computer system all day. Now, you can tell I'm emotional about this because it matters. Does anyone else feel like it's getting harder and harder to leave after a shift and feel you're a good doctor? So why is it when I'm providing good care and I know what I need to do, I go home feeling like a failure because I'm nowhere near as efficient as I used to be because it seems like everybody else is throwing more and more roadblocks in our way to do what we need and no one seems to give a damn about making it easier for us to spend time with patients. And it's infuriating. So one nice thing was after all of this, I talked to that family, delivered the news, set him up with an oncologist, admitted him to the hospital. Turns out his sister works for the health system as a human resource person, and she sent a nice email the next day and said, they appreciated the compassion with which the news was delivered, could tell I hated delivering the news. Answered all the questions in a way her brother could understand. The oncologist even said I'd called the oncologist before talking to the family because I was concerned, and what a good job the ER doc did. Those stories matter, right? Anyone have a folder at home with some the rare little notes you get of thanks? And you guard that folder, don't you? We don't got a lot of that stuff, so to get those nice notes is important. So the wrap up here, the reason I tell you this story, I can't fix all this stuff. I can't make it all better, but I got one heck of a gig being the president of the American Medical Association and being able to convey and tell our stories and try to help other people understand why it's so important to care a little bit more about making the doctor's work a little bit easier so we can spend time with patients and do the right thing. And so what I want to leave you with is my opportunity is not to join the chorus of people complaining and whining, because believe me, I can do that very well. My opportunity is to convey a sense of hope and positive vision for the future and try to find a path to lead us to it. So the AMA is doing great things trying to radically change medical education, improve health outcomes for pre-diabetic and hypertensive patients, and also to restore the joy to the practice of medicine, to improve physician satisfaction and practice sustainability. And they're big goals, and they're really hard goals, and we may or may not succeed, but we are gonna try really, really hard. And it's so important for all of you that I think we keep a few things in mind so that all of us can have a better chance of success. Those are the three things I generally talk about in my themes is we have got to do a better job working together across specialties, across geographies, because the old saying that Ben Franklin said, if we don't hang together, we will most assuredly hang separately. And we sure as heck do a doggone good job of carving ourselves up for everybody else. We have got to do a better job with that. The next thing is we have absolutely got to innovate for the future, because there is no hope and crying over spilt milk about what we've lost in the past. We are the most highly trained, highly educated clinicians in the healthcare enterprise. We should walk with our head held high, but not to impugn or diminish the value or contributions of others, but to be proud of what we uniquely can offer. And we had better find blue skies opportunities for what we can do differently and better for the future to support our value. And that leads directly to the third thing. We have got to keep the patient at the center of this and keep the doctor-patient relationship as our first goal. The minute we start slipping and talking overwhelmingly about our financial self-interest, our prerogatives, our privileges, our rights, we have lost. The day that we stop being principally and first and foremost the patient's advocate in this jacked up, messed up health system that's a non-system we got in this country is the day they will no longer value us. So those thank yous that we get that are few and infrequent are the things we've got to strive to make more of and do great work for patients. And so I can't answer all the things we need to fix, but I sure as heck hope when you leave, at least you know one of us gets to go the places I get to go, like the White House and the Federal Trade Commission, and testify to Congress and meet with senior executives and try to convey why we've got to do things differently. And so, Kevin, I won't go 30 minutes, and I'll wrap up right after this here. I know not everybody is an AMA member, and I'm okay with that, because you know what? You are all leaders, and what you do every day is so important, and I want you to know we work awfully darn hard to make sure your life is as good as we can get it and better each day. But for those of you who are members, I think in a profession of leaders, you specially distinguish yourselves as leaders of leaders, and I want you to hear from me a thank you for your membership. For those who are not, I hope something inspires you to consider joining that collection of leaders of leaders. But I sometimes jokingly describe myself in this role as having the great privilege to be the Pope for doctors in the United States for all the good reasons. And it is fun. It is fun picking up the phone and calling a doctor in their office at 12:30, and their secretary comes and says, some guy who says he's the president of the AMA is on the phone. Because they sent me an email or I saw a comment they made, and I call them and I just say, I want to thank you for your thoughtful contributions, the great work you're doing, and thank you for being a member. And that's a great joy. It is wicked fun to be able to catch people off guard with good news and a surprise. It's really, really fun. The AMA goes where others don't dare to go. By our very definition, we go where there's controversy and the stakes are high, and we are bound to tick people off when we make hard decisions. And we don't always get it right, but we try hard every time to do the best we can. It is an immense privilege to be part of this profession. It's an immense privilege to serve in this role. I want to thank you for what you do every day for patients in the profession and for your support for me in this role and the opportunity it affords our profession and our specialty to have a voice where we may not have always had a voice. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.